Hey, this is Dr. Robert Glover, and this is mid-March 2020, and we are smack dab in the middle of what we are calling the coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic. And as I said, this is mid-March. I hope that this, we might be able to say, hey, we're halfway through this, but nobody really knows. There's lots of unknown, lots of conflicting information, lots of misinformation, lots of social isolation, and now mandated enforced social distancing. And we're seeing a lot of economic challenge beginning both on the macro and micro level. And, you know, we've all got fear. We all have stress. We're all ruminating. We're all filled with anxiety and tension, and it's showing up in all areas of our life. And paradoxically and unfortunately, this is the exact opposite of what we really want to be going on in our mind, body, as we are dealing with something pretty severe. So I decided, you know, I pondered, what can I do to help? What can I do to help me? And what can I do to help others? So I decided to record this podcast and to just distribute it to anybody who wants it, who's interested in it. And what I want to do is describe my favorite go-to self-soothing techniques that I've incorporated into my life over the last 30 plus years or so, and the techniques I've been teaching other people, clients, people in my seminars, my online classes. And let me just say just a little bit about anxiety, and then I want to share with you some of my my most useful, powerful tools for dealing with my own anxiety. When I wrote No More Mr. Nice Guy, and a lot of the focus that as I began to look at the whole nice guy syndrome, both in myself and in lots of other men that I was working with, I really focused in on shame and how I saw nice guy syndrome basically being a shame-based murder. By the time I finished writing the book and then got it published and then continued to do my own work and continued to work over the last 20 years since then with thousands of nice guys, I have also come to see that nice guy syndrome is also equally an anxiety-based disorder, in that pretty much everything nice guys do is trying to manage their shame and manage their anxiety states, which are often closely related to their shame date. So when I began really realizing this kind of dual foundation of nice guy syndrome and sharing that with the men I was working with, around 20 years or so ago when I was leading up to 5 men's groups a week in my private practice, it seems like several times a week, maybe in almost every group I led, somebody would say, can we talk about self-soothing? Can we talk about soothing our anxiety? I came to make a distinction between what I call managing anxiety and soothing it. Managing anxiety often takes two fronts. One is we try to control people and or situations outside of us so we don't feel so much anxiety, or we medicate it on the inside of us. And we can do this with medications. We can do it with legal and illegal substances. We can do it with food, with alcohol, with porn, with codependency, with television, with spending money. We can do it with lots of things to manage our anxiety. Now, the other side of that is soothing anxiety. And I define soothing anxiety as our ability to calm the anxiety inside of us, or to create enough courage within ourselves to take action even when we feel anxious, and to also learn to moderate and soothe and calm that anxiety inside us, because it is a lot easier to take scary action when we're able to calm ourselves. So over the last 20 to 30 years, as I've worked on myself and worked with many, many men and women, I've come up with, I'm just going to give you 4 of my favorite go-to self-soothing strategies. These are the things that I do when I'm wound up, when I'm anxious, when I need to fall asleep, when I need to get back to sleep, when I'm facing a new or novel situation, as we all are right now. So let me just dive in and share with you my 4 favorite self-soothing strategies. And the first one is really simple, and it's just breathe. Now, that may sound kind of like, oh, come on, Robert, come up with something better than that. But that's it, and that's actually number one. That is my number one go-to self-soothing strategy. And there's lots of ways we can practice this breathing. We can do it in meditation, where we focus on our breath and use it as our center, and just taking a normal breath, just asking our body, how much air do you need, when do you need it, breathing in, breathing out, just slow and steady and pleasant. Now, a couple of other breathing techniques that I have found really helpful. The first is what's called diaphragmatic breathing. And this is just basically belly breath. It is how little babies naturally breathe, but most of us forget how to breathe from our diaphragm, from our belly. And especially when we are stressed, we tend to hunch over, we tighten up, our chest gets compressed, our nose, our throat, everything gets stressed and compressed. So diaphragmatic breathing is really very simple. It begins with just kind of do this. Just kind of pull your shoulders back, open your chest, maybe just sit up a little bit straighter, open the channels, kind of lift your head a little bit. Don't lift your chin up, but maybe just the crown of your head as if you kind of just had a wire pulling it up. Straighten your body up a little bit. Maybe put your right hand on your belly, right above your belly button, and your left hand on your chest. And then slowly breathe. And notice which hand moves the most. Now, if your chest breathing is probably fairly shallow, and your right hand on your belly isn't going to move, and your left hand actually is not going to move that much either. Now, if you move your focus to breathing into your belly, into your diaphragm, now, as corny and maybe gross as it sounds, I find it helpful. I tell people, think about breathing up through your asshole. Breathe up from down below into your belly, and notice your right hand rises much more than your left hand that is on your chest. So just do this, just for a couple moments, for two or three breaths. So I just took three diaphragmatic breaths with you, and I only, by the second breath, felt myself calmer in this very moment, and I felt my mind slow down to where it was just in this moment, really just feeling my breath. And for me, that's the beauty of diaphragmatic breathing, just really of any kind of conscious breathing. It slows your mind down. It can slow rumination. It connects your body, mind, and most importantly, it just brings you right into the here and now, into this moment, in this place where you sit. And you can do this anywhere. You can do it. I'm sitting at my desk. You can do it driving your car. You can do it while having a conversation. Just slowly breathe into your belly and then breathe out again. Called diaphragmatic breathing. Practice it. It does take practice, and I find, even though I've been practicing this for 20 plus years, I'll still catch myself breathing shallow, hunched over, and as soon as I notice, whenever my rememberer kicks in, I will slow down, breathe into my belly, return to my body, return to the here and now. Now, another kind of breath that is often used in yoga circles, and there's technical names for it. I just call it uneven breathing. And this is just a way to just kind of shake your nervous system up a little bit, kind of shake the breathing patterns up a little bit, and supposedly it also helps relieve stress. Now, there's different types of uneven breathing. A very simple one is where you breathe in for a count of four and breathe out for a count of six. So just try that. Just breathe in, two, three, four. Breathe out, two, three, four, five, six. And maybe even stretch that to breathing out for eight. You can double it. So there's not a right way to do it, but just do it unevenly. And just do it very consciously. That's the beauty of it. It forces you to be conscious. You're counting, It puts you in the here and now. It takes you out of a lot of other stressful thinking patterns. So no matter what you do, and there's lots of many different approaches to breathing, but I found that the diaphragmatic breathing and the uneven breath are just something you can do anywhere throughout your day, at night, and they all have the effect of amazing self-soothing qualities. And I've now come to say that one of my greatest joys is breathing. It doesn't matter where I am, what I'm doing, just what's going on in my day. When I can just become conscious, return to the moment, the here and now, return to my body and breathe, the breathing feels, just amazing. My body feels alive and my mind slows down. The noise, the chatter, the crap just slows down. So practice this. This is go-to number one. It's the foundation of all my self-soothing strategies, and I suggest you make it the foundation of yours. And again, do it regularly throughout the day and night. All right, self-soothing strategy number two, and I just call it, I will handle it. When I was going through my divorce from my first wife 30 plus years ago, I came across a book. I actually had read an excerpt of it in a magazine before the book was published, and thought, when that book gets published, I'm going to buy the book. Now, I didn't realize that the book would actually come out when I would really need it, when I had separated and was looking at the possibility of a divorce. And it was an amazingly stressful time for me. Now, in this book that I told you about, it's called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And a lot of you are nodding your head. I've recommended it to so many people. And everybody I've ever recommended it to has just loved it. And it's a very simple read. I'm grateful for Susan Jeffers, the author. I've tried to contact her in the past. She's since passed away. She is one of those people I wanted to express my gratitude to and never was able to, unfortunately. But since reading that book 30 years ago, and Susan Jeffers breaks down fear, she breaks it down to about three levels, but she says beneath all levels of fear is an underlying belief that I can't handle it. Now, I can't handle feeling foolish. I can't handle getting rejected. I can't handle getting sick. I can't handle getting hurt. I can't handle anybody thinking badly of me. I can't handle a family member getting sick or dying. Or I can't handle a job interview or a radio interview, whatever. Underneath everything, every fear we have is that belief. I can't handle it. And so she says, really, if you want to face your fears and do it anyway, we have to change our inner belief. And we have to change that to no matter what happens, I will handle it. Now, this sounds, you know, pretty simple and maybe even Pollyannish, but in my experience, is profound. It's not simple, and it is not Pollyannish. It's true. It's accurate. Since I started repeating the dark days of that divorce, I had no fucking clue how I was going to handle things. I remember falling asleep nightly with just tons of worries, economic, dealing with shame, the change in my career, separation from my then two-year-old son. I did not have any idea how I was going to handle all those things or where it was going to turn out. And literally, I fell asleep every night just repeating that over and over and over again until finally I fell asleep. And I just kept repeating, I'll handle it. No matter what happens, I'll handle it. And whenever I woke up, I would start repeating it again because the fears kicked in. Now, that's been 30 years ago, and I still use this mantra often daily. Whenever I am stressed or anxious, I remind myself, I'll handle it. Even making this podcast, it kind of took me a couple days to put it together. And I know part of it was just kind of an anxiety of, oh, you know, I want to do it right. I want to do it well, blah, 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 blah. And I finally just said, I'll handle it. And I sat down and printed out my notes and just started recording. So that message that I will handle it. And I remind myself all the time, of that I'll handle it. I remember one time I was doing a television interview. This is several years ago for Geraldo. And, you know, it's kind of a big deal doing an interview for the Geraldo show. And I remember they came to my office and I was all mic'd up and there were lights and cameras and sound people. And the sound guy looked at me and said, "Man, you look really calm." I'm sure usually when they mic up most amateurs for a TV recording, they look pretty stressed. He said, you look really calm. And I said, "Well, I've done this a time or two." The truth was, I was anxious as hell. I mean, I was stressed. And I just kept telling myself, I will handle it. And I kept reminding myself, I've handled every other thing that I ever was afraid of. And in that moment, I was actually reminding myself that I had faced my fear of learning to salsa dance, which just scared the bejeebers out of me. For, you know, to this day, I'm still not sure why, but it scared me to death. And I kept facing that fear and going back to it until it became something that didn't scare me, or at least not so much. So in that moment, I was reminding myself of things from the past that really scared me, and I survived. I handled it. I did well. And I was still alive and ticking. So here's the reality. We are in challenging times. And the reality is we will handle it. We have handled similar and worse things before. Depending on your age, you can look back and look at other global scary events and times that we handled. In my lifetime, I go back, I'm 64 years old, and probably my first big fear and memory is the Cuban Missile Crisis in the early 60s. I was just, you know, I don't know, 6-7 years old. And, you know, we were ducking under desks as if that was going to do something to help us if a nuclear bomb, you know, was launched on us. But, man, I was a little kid. That just scared me to death that we were going to go to nuclear war with Russia. I grew up during the Cold War and the constant nuclear threat of that, Vietnam War and all the craziness of that, several economic downturns, you know, going the Reagan years and just recession then, inflation, and then I guess we call the Great Recession just 10 years ago that actually, you know, we've been in a bull market for, you know, the last 10 years and it's, remember, we were all scared to death 10 years ago. And things, you know, they're scary again. Previous pandemics, H1N1, scared us to death. And we handled it. We handled them, and we got through them, and we got stronger, and we survived. And we are going to handle everything that is going on right now. So, no matter what happens, you will handle it. We will handle it. Repeat that right now. Just repeat it. No matter what happens, I will handle it. No matter what happens, I will handle it. Now take a deep breath and just repeat that in your mind and just let it sink in. I'll handle it. No matter what I'm afraid of, I will handle it. All right, that's, like I said, that's been a go-to self-soothing strategy for 30-plus years for me, and I still use it regularly. All right, another self-soothing strategy is gratitude. And ironically, this one I began practicing going through my second divorce, now almost 20 years ago. And I started going to some 12-step programs to just help me deal with the separation and break out of the toxic cycle of that marriage. And in 12-step programs, they've got a lot of euphemisms and sayings and mantras, and one of them is about practicing an attitude of gratitude. And that really struck me. And, you know, I said I've separated. My book was about to come out. It was really an uncertain time for me, and I did to start a gratitude practice. And I invited a friend that I'd made in a 12-step group to do it with me. And what I suggested that we both do is every night before we get in bed, kneel down and just think of some things we feel grateful for. Now, you know, you can call this prayer, you can call it meditation, you can call it anything you want, and it doesn't need a deity or even a source. It's just changing our mental mindset. And then first thing in the morning, when we first woke up, we both would think of things for which we feel grateful, maybe just for a minute or two. That's all. You don't even have to go crazy with this. Just do it a minute or two. Last thing at night before you get in bed, or once you've gotten in bed, first thing in the morning before you crawl out of bed. And I still have that practice to this day, almost 20 years later. First thing I wake up in the morning, I just say, thank you. Thank you for a restful night's sleep. Thankful for a comfortable bed. Grateful for my air conditioning unit. Grateful for my 600 thread count sheets. And, you know, just start your day with that. You're fucking alive. Be grateful for that. Start with that mindset. And then throughout the day, whenever I get stressed or anxious or worried or uptight, I take the breath and I start thinking of things for which I feel grateful. And it's amazing, powerful. And my theory is what this does is this gratitude moves us out of the survival, fight, flight, freeze, flee part of our brain, that amygdala, that survival part that's meant to, you know, energize us to escape, you know, tigers and other things that are maybe about to kill us or destroy us. And we stay in that state a lot. And often it's built around old fears, self-limiting beliefs, deprivation thinking, unconsciousness, fears that society, you know, piles on top of us. And so I found it's just really helpful to shift the part of the brain, my mind, that is working. And it connects us to what is, not the fears and deprivation our mind dwells on. And what's amazing, when you start thinking of things for which you feel grateful, everything does seem to shift. Shifts your perception. And one of the things I've been saying for a long time, if you cannot be consciously aware of how abundantly blessed you are right now in this moment, no matter how much your brain tells you, you know, you're in terrible shape, if you cannot be aware of how abundantly blessed you are right now, it would not do any good to multiply that by 10, by 100, by 1,000, by a million. You would still have the same deprivation thinking. You'd still be in your fight, flight, freeze, flee, you'd still be in that place. So we have to practice moving ourselves out of that survival part of our brain into the here and now, into the reality that you're alive and ticking and you are abundantly blessed. And granted, sometimes feel better than other times. I'm human. Sometimes I feel like I'm on top of the world, and other times I feel like, man, you know, I can't believe everything that's gone wrong. And I still go back to my gratitude practice. And as I said, I've been doing this for almost 20 years, and I still do it because we can choose what our mind focuses on. We can get caught up in our fear, our negativity, and deprivation, and that becomes a habit. Or we can focus on how abundantly blessed we are in any given moment. And again, this is not Pollyannish. It's not ignoring reality. It is actually focusing on what is real. Our needs have been taken care of every day of our lives up to now. Why would we believe that's going to stop tomorrow? And that's what our deprivation and fearful thinking is. Thinking, oh no, everything's going to go to hell in a handbasket right now, you know, tomorrow. But the truth is, as we've already established, we've survived everything that's ever frightened us in our lives. We've handled it. So if we've survived and our needs have been taken care of in every moment, we were just 100% sure we were not going to be taken care of, and here we still are, it stands to reason our needs will be taken care of tomorrow. So focus on what you feel grateful for. It not only shifts your mind, your thinking, it calms you, it soothes you, it brings you into reality and brings you into the current moment. I send myself several quotes a day on my phone, and one I send myself every day. And this is my absolute favorite. It's a quote by a man named Meister Eckhart. And he said, if the only prayer you say in your whole life is thank you, that would suffice. I just like that so much. If the only prayer you say in your whole life is thank you, that would suffice. So practice gratitude throughout your day. It's amazingly powerful. All right, and then tool number four, and I don't know if I invented this or if I stole it from somewhere or it's a combination of some things, but I've been teaching it for quite some time, and I call it an obsess appointment. Now, many of you know I teach an online class called The Ruminating Brain, where I give lots and lots and lots of tools to help people work with, live with, calm, redirect, manage their ruminating brain, having a mind that just spins 24/7 like a washing machine in ways that tends to make us feel bad about ourselves, keeps us stuck, and tends to keep us socially isolated. So I give a lot of tools, and for me, the most powerful tool I teach is the obsess appointment. And I've done many of these, and I still do them. It's an amazingly simple and powerful tool for both disciplining the mind, bringing us back to reality, calming us, soothing us. And again, it's just real simple because, you know, our mind can spin about something 24/7, especially when we're stressed or anxious like we all are right now. Or maybe you're listening to this, you know, months or years after I'm recording it during this stressful time. So any stressful time you're in, this can be really helpful because our mind gets caught up. It gets to spinning. It's like the, you know, the hamster in the wheel or the washing machine or top spinning, whatever metaphor we want to use. And it's this hum in the background 24/7. It keeps us in an anxious state. It keeps keeps us in that fight, flight, freeze, where hormones are flooding our nervous system and in ways that are not good for us, that are actually really detrimental to our nervous system and to our immune system. It invades our dreams. It invades our sleep. It keeps us stressed out. It can lead to our self-destructive behaviors that we've already mentioned, the kind of things we do to manage when we're stressed out. And it's disruptive to our relationships and our overall well-being anytime our mind is unconsciously spinning and ruminating. So all an obsess appointment does is take what is unconscious and makes it conscious. Now, it's really simple. I'll go find a quiet place when you have a moment. And I used to do these for 10 minutes. I've now found that 5 minutes is usually sufficient. But I say, to start out, set your alarm for 8 minutes. Now, all you're going to do is start your timer to go off in 8 minutes, relax, take a few breaths, and do nothing but consciously, now the key word here is consciously, ruminate on what you've been unconsciously spending about 24/7. Now, there's no other strategy than that. Just ruminate about this thing. Pick something, whether it's coronavirus, whether it's economic instability, whether it's the state of your relationships, whether it's, you know, are you going to get sick, whatever. Pick one thing. You know, you can kind of do a basket of things if you want, but I found it's, especially starting out, it's better just pick one thing. And then do nothing but just ruminate on that for 8 minutes. Now, again, there's no rules to doing it. Come at it from every way you can think of to just turn this thing inside out and ruminate it. Now, you're not looking for answers. You're not trying to fix it. You're not trying to make it go away. You're just consciously doing what you've been unconsciously doing 24/7. Now, here's the irony. Most people cannot fill the full 8 minutes. Your mind will drift, which is kind of weird because our mind can spin about this for days and months around the clock, but when you do it consciously, you can't even obsess about it for a full 8 minutes. So treat that thing as your center. Treat this like a meditation. So when your mind drifts during the obsess appointment, just notice it and bring your mind back to that chosen topic to obsess about. And just keep doing that till your alarm goes off. Now, I'm going to suggest, if you've never done these before, if you tend to have a ruminating brain, or especially during this very stressful time, schedule 2 or 3 of these a day. Put them on your calendar. You know, set an alarm to go off 2 or 3 times during the day. Now, here's the beauty of doing this. It really becomes a practice in disciplining your mind. Most of us have very, very undisciplined minds. Our thinker goes wherever it wants to go, and we follow it. And we tend to believe whatever it tells us is true, because that's what minds do. Minds believe whatever the mind says is true. But we can learn to be the observer of all this, not the believer of it. And so if you start a practice, and it is a practice, say 2 or 3 times a day, maybe 4 times if you really are spun up, schedule it. Do that 8-minute obsess appointment. Pick one thing that, and just obsess about that for the 8 minutes. Now, not only does this kind of shift you out of the your amygdala, your survival part of your brain, into more conscious, aware part of your brain, it also it gives you a discipline and a soothing, but it also gives you a strategy for when these invasive thoughts and ruminations pop up other times in between the obsess appointments. You can say to them, I mean, one part of your mind can speak to another part of your mind and say, we aren't going to think about that right now. We will think about that during the next obsess appointment at 2 o'clock, 6 o'clock, whatever. Now, then just redirect your thinking. Go back into your breath. Just go into your body. Go into the present moment. Look around. Look at nature. Pay attention to what you're doing. And you can redirect the thinking, and you can begin to discipline your mind. So you can tell it, no, I use the editorial we. We are not going to think about that right now. We will think about that during our next obsess appointment. Now, this is important. Keep the obsess appointment, because if you don't, if you promise your spinning mind, your ruminating brain, that you will do an obsess appointment, if you tell it, we are not going to think about that now, we will think about it during the next obsess appointment, and if you do not keep it, the next time you try to do that, your mind is basically going to flip you the bird with both fingers and say, you know, I'm going to do what I want to do. So keep the obsess appointments. Now, once you've developed the ability to redirect and even stop this rumination, you can also easily do it at night. Now, that's been amazingly helpful for me. Several years ago, I set up several categories of things I will not let myself think about at night, either falling asleep at night or if I wake up early in the morning. I do not let myself think about economics, about relationship, about politics, about work. And if something work-related comes up that's really important, I'll write it down, but then I will quit thinking about it. And what I've done, I've trained my mind. If these thoughts permeate my thinking anytime once I'm in the bed, before I get out of bed, I again use that editorial we. We are not going to think about that right now. If we need to, we will think about them in the morning. And then if I need to, I do an obsess appointment in the morning. When I say that to myself, I then return to my breathing, to just feeling my body, to just being in that moment. And I repeat that as often as I need to at night. Now, with this whole coronavirus thing going on right now as I'm talking to you, as I'm recording this, I've had to do that. Again, I've now made anything related to coronavirus, whether it be, you know, government inaction or action, or, you know, general stupidity, or the news media, or, you know, whatever, I do not let myself go there at night. Once I'm in the bed, till I get out of bed, off limits. So I do have to practice that policy, because it will creep into my thinking at night. You know, waking up at 4 in the morning, you know, thinking about this thing or that thing or this other thing. And I tell myself, we are not going to think about that right now. If we need to, we will think about it in the morning. And then if I need to, I do an obsess appointment in the morning. All right, those are my goodies. Those are my go-to self-soothing strategies. Now, there's other things we can do to help, especially in any stressful time, but especially right now. Do anything you can to support your immune system. Take really good care of you. Exercise. Maybe think in terms of exercising moderately, but not too strenuously. Not over tax yourself, but just enough to get some release. Really, rest, relax, meditate, get plenty of sleep. Take naps. I've become a big, big connoisseur of naps. And I had to actually practice a few years ago when I was really sick. I had to practice letting go of all guilt around naps because I had no energy. I just had to. And so I learned to really enjoy and embrace a good siesta. I live in Mexico. It's part of the culture. So honor nap time. Read, listen to music, but read good stuff, stuff that just, you know, good literature, good poetry, just stuff that soothes you and calms you and fills you. Practice yoga and stretching. Spend time in nature. Drink lots of water. This is always a good idea. Limit alcohol. Eat a healthy diet. Try going back to supporting your immune system. Try intermittent fasting, taking cold showers or cold plunges. These all help strengthen your immune system. Limit time on social media. Just maybe follow one or two or three people that are actually, you know, putting out good information, right? We don't need all the noise. And stop watching the news. I have not watched news probably in 25 years. I can give you a lot of reasons for not watching the news, but mainly because it is visual, and they're feeding us stuff to keep us hooked on watching the news. It's an addictive process. It goes to a deep part of your brain and really triggers you. If you need to follow the news, follow it from just a couple of good news sources, but do not watch news. And you know, especially do not watch local news. The mantra in local news, if it doesn't bleed, it doesn't lead. They love drama. And right now, the media is feeding us 24/7 drama. Try to disconnect from that. And while you disconnect from that, connect with friends and family in whatever ways you can. If this is a time that you're listening to this, that there is mandated or suggested social distancing, okay, still stay connected. My kids right now are out of school for 5 weeks. So last night we got out the dominoes and my wife and the kids, we all played Mexican train and just laughed and relaxed and had a good time. So use this as a way to connect with people. Also serve other people. Now, if you in this particular situation right now, if you can volunteer, if you can serve, if you are healthy and not immune challenged, or over, let's say, 70 years old and can serve other people, do it. And I'm going to suggest send several people you know right now, when you get done with this, send them a message that you are thinking about them and grateful for them. That's good for you and is good for them as well. Now, I want to wrap this up with something that is typically called the Serenity Prayer. And this is something that probably most of us recognize, probably has been most popularized within 12-step programs. And, you know, I think many of us have heard it many times, and maybe almost it can seem trite. But you know what? The older I get and the more I've dealt with difficult situations in life, the more I really, really see the wisdom of living by the Serenity Prayer. And it's really this. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Now, this is so simple but so profound. Do what you can when you can. Act with courage. Go do what you can do to change any particular situation you are in. But we can't change everything. There's certain things about this pandemic right now we cannot change. There's things we can change, right? But there's certain things we cannot. So the Serenity Prayer says, accept those things, and I'm going to add, practice your self-soothing skills as you accept what you cannot change. Okay, wrapping this thing up, practice your conscious breathing. Remind yourself that you will handle it. You always have. Practice gratitude and abundance thinking. And schedule some obsess appointments. I think you'll actually enjoy them. Now, practice these things. Again, as they say in 12-step programs, they work if you work them. They don't work if you don't do them. Make them a part of your daily life. And especially when you're in challenging times or when you are stressed out about something that's maybe just unique to your particular life. Now, Feel free to share this podcast with anyone you think can use it. And feel free to drop me an email at robert@drglover.com if my staff or I can do anything to help you. Now, when this recording ends, before you jump up and do something different or go surfing on the internet, take 5 slow, diaphragmatic, relaxing breaths. Remind yourself that you will handle it. Think of a few things you feel grateful for. And then schedule an obsess appointment. Thank you.